This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington, and coming up on Africa News Tonight.
The estranged wife of Lesotho's incoming prime minister has been shot dead, just days ahead of the new leader's swearing in. His party recently swept to power after five unstable years that included vicious infighting and political violence. And now the party says it is worried the violence may return.
That's VOA's Anita Powell reporting from Johannesburg. Details coming up. Also, the attack yesterday on two restaurants in central Mogadishu has left a total of 30 people dead. A grenade explosion in Burundi's capital has left one person dead and nine others injured. And UNICEF says child poverty and hunger are widespread in 41 of the world's richest countries. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on African News Tonight. Our top story, the attack yesterday on two restaurants in central Mogadishu that extended into a deadly overnight siege has left 30 people dead. Al-Shabaab claims responsibility. Mohamed Yusuf has the story from Nairobi.
Somali soldiers launched their counterattack about dawn Thursday, ending the deadly 11-hour siege by five gunmen at a popular restaurant in Mogadishu. Ahmed Mohamed Arab is the Somali Security Ministry spokesman. He spoke to reporters after the end of the siege. He says 18 civilians have died, among them a Syrian national who was working in the restaurant. Seven of them were women and 19 people were injured. The enemy is no longer targeting the government officials and security forces. They are targeting Somali people. Security sources tell VOA Somali service that all six attackers also were killed, as well as five Somali soldiers. The attack started Wednesday with a suicide car bomb outside two restaurants, Pizza House and Poor Streets, causing massive damage. The gunmen then entered the restaurants. Fierce gun battles ensued with security forces. Al-Shabaab quickly claimed responsibility on its website. In recent weeks, the Somali government, with the help of African Union troops and US airstrikes, has carried out a series of ground attacks against Al-Shabaab with the aim of wresting more territory from the Al-Qaeda militants. Somalia's president has vowed to defeat Al-Shabaab in 2 years. The intensified military action could make them more dangerous in short term, says Mustafa Ali, a security and conflict resolution expert on the Horn of Africa.
The fact that they are losing territory and will lose more territory means that they are going to melt into the population and will mount more of these kind of attacks, therefore kind of scattering their foot soldiers and making them even more deadly.
The VOA Somali service reports that Wednesday attack began just hours after the militant group released purported audio of their elusive deputy leader Mahad Karate. Karate was reported to have been the target of US drone strike on Sunday near the town of Sako in Middle Juba region. The group did not confirm or deny whether he was within the vicinity of the drone strike, and based on the content of the audio released, it could have been recorded prior to the strike. In the audio, Karate called for escalated attacks during the month of Ramadan, which began at the end of May. But Rashid Abdi, an analyst for the International Crisis Group, is cautious about drawing direct links between recent military action and this attack.
Attacks have been going on for some time. I don't think they are retaliatory responses to what the declaration of a new war by the government and also the Trump administration's intent to escalate the airstrikes.
Al-Shabaab has carried out numerous bombings and assassinations in Mogadishu over the past year. Ali says the tide is turning against this strategy of targeting civilians to instill fear.
Somalis are fed up. Al-Shabaab and other warring groups, for them to show signs that they've been cowed by Al-Shabaab is going to work in favor of Al-Shabaab. And many Somalis have learned that and they've built their own resilience, and I believe they will continue with their own activities.
The Somali government recently began disarming civilians and freelance militia in an effort to secure the capital, a move Mogadishu residents hope will help thwart further attacks. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
In other news on Somalia, the UN Security Council has unanimously adopted a resolution to extend the UN political mission there until March 2018. In doing so, the Council also condemned attacks by al-Shabaab militants. The Associated Press reports the resolution calls on the mission to support the government's efforts to fight corruption, review the constitution, and develop effective political and judicial systems. The Security Council also expressed grave concern at what it called the credible and renewed risk of famine in Somalia due to drought and conflict. The estranged wife of Lesotho's incoming prime minister has been shot dead just days ahead of the new leader's swearing. His party recently swept to power after five unstable years that included vicious infighting and political violence, and now the party says it's worried the violence may return. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
Tom Tabane will take office Friday with a heavy heart, his spokesman says, after his estranged wife was shot dead Wednesday night outside the capital of the tiny Southern African nation. Lipolelo Tabane's killing has sparked fears that Lesotho is returning to political violence. Tabane is taking a second turn at being prime minister after his last term ended suddenly in 2014, when he fled to neighboring South Africa because he said the army was trying to kill him. Tabane recently returned his all-Basotho convention party to power in a snap poll held earlier this month. It was the third election in 5 years, after bitter infighting brought down the previous two coalition governments. Moiketsi Majuru, the spokesman for Tabane's party, told VOA that the police have yet to name a suspect and that the party is trying not to speculate on what may have happened. Lipolelo Tabane died on the scene from her wounds. A friend who was traveling with her is being treated at a hospital.
It's when a death like this occurs, it raises a lot of ire and a lot of speculation. And of course, it's our responsibility as the incoming government to ensure that we don't over-speculate and let the law enforcement agencies to take the lead in investigating these deaths.
Majuru, who is one of the party's 48 new lawmakers recently voted into power, urged Basotho citizens to try to remain calm, even if they, like him, are rattled.
After the reporting of his death, I thought things were going to be reasonably smooth, but this tells me that nothing should be taken for granted going forward. It sends signals that we are back to 2014 again, when it was not easy to govern.
That's because the military has long been tightly entwined with this nation's political woes. The army led a 1986 coup to push out a long-serving government. In this century, Lesotho's military has been involved in a number of political actions, including the action that ended Tabane's last term after just 2 years in office. One of Tabane's strongest campaign promises was that he could embark on a set of serious reforms to bring the nation's security forces into line and keep them from interfering in political matters. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
In Burundi, a grenade explosion in the capital has left one person dead and 10 others injured. AFP quotes the mayor of Bujumbura as saying the grenade was thrown among a group of people having a beer near the bus station in Musaga. Musaga is an opposition stronghold in southern Bujumbura. Many protests were held there in 2015 after President Pierre Nkurunziza announced he would seek a third term in office. Critics called it unconstitutional. Since then, political violence has claimed hundreds of lives, while hundreds of thousands have left for neighboring countries. In related news, UN investigators say Burundi security forces continue to abduct, torture and kill people with near impunity. A commission of inquiry has collected testimony from nearly 500 people since September. The chairman says the panel is struck by the particular cruel and brutal nature of the violations described. Burundi government officials strongly deny the allegations. Malnourished children in the Great Upper Nile region of South Sudan will be getting emergency medical care. Lutheran World Relief says It will soon begin providing them with 24-hour life-saving treatment. A severe food crisis is being fueled by extreme drought in the area. Compounding the situation is ongoing conflict that has killed over 50,000 people and displaced nearly 2 million since December 2013. The NGO is joining another faith-based group, the IMA World Health, to run 3 treatment centers in the area where there are no emergency medical facilities. Karitani Hill is an emergency program manager for Lutheran World Relief and has just returned from South Sudan. She spoke with Kim Lewis about the treatment centers.
These are stabilization centers, is sort of what they're called. And we're going to be setting up 3 of them in 3 counties in the greater Upper Nile area. And they're really going to be focused on children and pregnant and lactating women, since those people tend to be the most vulnerable groups during famine or a food crisis. And really, these patients who are accessing them are going to be sort of the most malnourished out of the group. They'll receive 24-hour care until they maintain a healthy weight and they're better. A lot of the patients who are coming in here actually have secondary illnesses like malaria as well. So we'll make sure that they maintain a healthy weight and that they're healthy in general.
So what are the biggest concerns in treating the most vulnerable, such as women and children and babies and pregnant women?
Some of the concerns are that they can't access the centers in general, which is why Lutheran World Relief has really decided that this intervention is the most useful, because in this area, there's actually only 4 stabilization centers that are servicing a really large population. So that's why if we build 3 more, then hopefully that'll ease some of the access to them. So not only are the people who are going to be using these centers coming from our partner IMA's clinics that they have already set up. A part of this project is doing door-to-door outreach in the community to make sure no one really goes untouched.
When will the centers be open?
The centers, I believe, are going to be open hopefully within the next month. The project just started June 1st, so we have to do some procurement to set up the actual clinics themselves. These clinics are made out of prefabricated materials, which thankfully are already located in Juba. So it's just a matter of doing the actual procurement and then airlifting them out to the sites where the clinics will be set up. Hopefully within the next month, that will be all completed and they'll be open and ready to receive patients.
Are you getting the cooperation that you need on the ground, given the instability in the area?
Fortunately, Lutheran World Relief and its partner, IMA World Health, is already working in that area. So they're quite entrenched. You know, we can't say for definite, but for right now, there is pretty extensive cooperation going on. Anything can happen in South Sudan. It's just the nature of working in a complex humanitarian crisis. But for now, we're quite hopeful that there shouldn't be any interruptions.
How many people will these centers serve total?
So total during the length of the project, which runs from June until the end of September, we're hoping to reach about 90,000 people.
I understand that you all also will have outpatient services. Can you tell us about these services?
This sort of goes back to the other clinics that IMA is currently running. One of the things that we'll be doing in addition to creation of these stabilization centers is also a pretty large purchase of medication. Medication is really hard to get funding for, unfortunately. So this is one of the ways that we're able to fill a gap and hopefully purchase a big bulk order of medication that is not only going to help with nutrition needs, but also things like malaria and other chronic diseases that are affecting these people, which is making them even more sick.
Karitani Hill is an emergency program manager for Lutheran World Relief. She spoke with Kim Lewis from Baltimore, Maryland. You were listening to Africa News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. Nineteen past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. The attack yesterday on two restaurants in central Mogadishu has left a total of 30 people dead. The estranged wife of Lesotho's incoming prime minister has been shot dead just days ahead of the new leader's swearing in. And a grenade explosion in Burundi's capital has left one person dead and nine others injured. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Desert locusts are usually harmless. However, when conditions are just right, they can swarm and destroy crops and pasture land. If things get really bad, a locust plague could put millions of people at risk of hunger. But now, a satellite early warning system is being developed to better predict when swarms might occur. VOA's Jody Capua reports.
The European Space Agency and the UN Food and Agriculture Organization will use satellites to monitor soil moisture and green vegetation. The ideal conditions for desert locusts to swarm are drought, followed by good rains and rapid vegetation growth. FAO's Keith Cressman says satellites can make a big difference when the alarm is sounded.
At the moment, we can provide early warning of outbreaks perhaps 1 month in advance, but normally that's only a couple of weeks. The new product will allow us to certainly double that time.
The senior locust forecasting officer says countries will have more time to get ready.
That means to mobilize the necessary teams in the field to intensify survey efforts to identify all the potential infestations that might be present. And it also allows them extra time to organize the necessary control operations.
It can make the difference between a swarm that's localized and a plague that's not. Between 2003 and 2005, locusts destroyed cereal crops in West Africa and damaged about 90% of legumes and pasture. That put the lives of 8 million people at risk. The FAO says it took 13 million liters of pesticide, costing $600 million, to bring the plague under control. The FAO says one square kilometer-sized swarm is made up of about 40 million locusts. They can eat the same amount of food in one day as 35,000 people. Cressman outlines the stages leading to a plague.
A locust plague doesn't develop overnight. It starts initially from very small localized outbreaks in a particular country. And if those outbreaks are not detected or controlled in time, and if there's sufficient rainfall and good conditions, that outbreak can then extend to a much larger, what we call upsurge, that can affect a number of countries or region. And similarly, if that upsurge is not controlled and conditions continue to be favorable, can then turn into a plague that can infect an entire continent, for example.
Images provided by the joint FAO European Space Agency project would come from satellites such as the one assigned to the Soil Moisture and Ocean Salinity mission.
The satellite images will show those areas where the soil is sufficiently moist enough to allow desert locust breeding. This is the stage in which the locust numbers increase. And when locust numbers increase, then there's that possibility for them to change their normally solitarious behavior to that of a gregariousness and to start to form these groups that then turn into hopper bands and adult swarms that cause the devastation.
The summer breeding season begins in late June or early July, mainly in the West Africa Sahel region and Sudan, and along the India-Pakistan border. Cressman says desert locusts are well adapted already to climate change. He says rising temperatures allow the insects to mature faster, giving them more time to breed. Also, climate change forecasts call for more and heavier rainfall in desert areas, creating good conditions for breeding. What's not clear is climate change's effect on wind. Desert locusts travel with the wind, and changes in wind patterns could bring them to areas they've never been before. It could take up to a year to fully implement the satellite early warning system. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
There was gridlock in Johannesburg today as minibus taxi drivers protested what they called unaffordable monthly payments on their vehicles. Media reports say the drivers blocked roads and highways and threatened motorists. Parents were told to keep their children home from school for their own safety. The Associated Press reports that travelers were seen wheeling their luggage along the highway on their way to O.R. Tambo International Airport. The Automobile Association urged motorists to be vigilant and remain calm if threatened. A new report by the UN Children's Fund, UNICEF, finds child poverty and hunger are widespread in 41 of the world's richest countries. The report says one in five children in rich countries lives in poverty, while one in eight often do not have enough to eat. Lisa Schlein reports from the launch of the report in Geneva.
The report finds high income does not necessarily lead to a good outcome for children and often serves to widen the gap between rich and poor. UN Children's Fund Chief of Social Policy and Economic Analysis, Jose Cuesta, says all 41 countries surveyed in one way or another are failing to protect the well-being of their children.
If I were to grade all countries, no one will get an A. There are good news, of course, quite a number of targets and areas. For instance, childhood learning or reductions in neonatal mortality rates. But there are also substantive gaps in some targets, such as, for instance, poverty reduction of children, increasing inequality, increasing obesity, and worsening mental health.
The seven top-ranked countries in UNICEF's league table of 41 countries includes all the Nordic countries, Norway, Denmark, Sweden, Finland, and Iceland, as well as Germany and Switzerland. The seven countries holding up the bottom are Chile, Mexico, the United States, Bulgaria, Romania, Israel, and Turkey. Cuesta tells VOA the United States, which ranks 37th, does not perform well in areas such as poverty, hunger, good health and well-being, and quality education.
Actually, it's a surprise and it's not a surprise at the same time, because consistently the U.S. is doing poorly across these 10 indicators. So it's not really one indicator driving the results here.
The report notes wealth and economic growth alone are not enough to ensure the well-being of children. UNICEF is urging rich countries to put children's needs at the heart of their policy agenda. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Werkinger, and our engineer, Nick Ivanov, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Douglas Simpoga. Join me for Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. We'll have African journalists and expert guests share their ideas on the topic at hand. So, please plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.